Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
Tom Bauer, one of our board ops, that, you know, he and Jacob, they I guess they platoon as board ops for this show. And as I'm just looking on Twitter real quick, I noticed that Tom doesn't follow me on Twitter. How should I feel about this? Just curious who he is following at the station, because I'm not on that list of people that he does follow. Followers, you know. There we go. I'll click on that. Oh, wow. Dan Grasso. Interesting. RJ Santillo, of course. Anthony Pusick, of course. Ray Santiago, I would hope so. That's good. Ty Butler, very good. Gordon Damer, excellent follow. Do not see my name. Also don't see Michael Kay. I don't see Don LaGreca. Tom, just curious, do you not like us?
You know, I like you, Alan, but now I'm starting to like you a little bit less for calling this out on the airwaves. But
I'm just it's a curiosity I just have, and I like answers. We got an education in the previous segment about show beef and hosts, and people are acting up, and I didn't know about this stuff. I just show up and everybody looks like they're happy, and I just say hi to people and I go home, and, you know, I don't carry any grudges. And now I'm hearing about beef and all these things going on. And then I find out that you, who work on our show, don't follow me.
Yeah, that's correct.
I don't know how to feel about that.
Well, now I'm going to continue not following you, at least for a provisionary period of time.
I'm in timeout now?
Yeah, kind of.
How about that? To make it awkward, I'm following you.
Excellent. I will continue to not follow you at least for a little bit longer.
How much longer? How much longer am I in timeout? You know, Stephon Marbury has me muted, and he has a date. This was like a good 5 years ago or so, where he tweeted something, tagged me, and said that I am muted until, and he has an exact date. And I never checked to see what the date was, to see like when does it expire. But he has muted me until this point. And I'm wondering what happens after he stops muting me. So I just need to know, like, is there a time period where the embargo is lifted?
Well, what would you be able to provide me with that I could theoretically lift the ban almost?
I can offer you a retweet where well over 100,000 people would see it. Is that valuable to you?
It's sort of valuable in this day and age. What else can you offer?
Oh, really? So now we're gonna negotiate a follow.
Yes, we're bartering right here.
I see. Tell you what, I'm gonna do now is unfollow, and then I'll think about it. Does that work better?
You know what? That's fine. I think we can. That'll keep the beef going, so that's fine with me. We're all about starting beef on the show today.
Exactly. Well, that's what it seems like everybody wants. They want everybody to fight each other and be mad at each other and everything else. And in the meantime, do we have Graz, or is he still doing like Sports Center or something?
Yeah, I saw him on the Sports Center, so we're on hold.
He's a little busy right now.
He's got a beef with you also, I think.
That's the other thing. We'll have a beef with him on that. So in the meantime, while we wait for Dan Graziano, perhaps this would be a perfect time then for us to just grab a few more calls. 800-919-3776. We go to Mike in Long Island. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Alan. I had a question.
Yeah.
Well, first I had a question that I want to talk about Ja Morant real quick. So in hockey, I'm not a big hockey fan, but the Florida Panthers, they're an 8 seed, and I never, ever hear anybody say that they're an 8 seed. Is there a reason why? I mean, in basketball, we always constantly hear about Miami being an 8 seed.
I know. You're right. I don't see – when I was covering hockey, we had that. We had 8 seeds and stuff like that. They changed up the divisions and the standings and how you make it, have wild card teams and all that stuff. And I got to be honest, I'm being dead serious, and I love hockey. My son plays it. I follow. I don't know what you're supposed to call it now. Do you call them an eighth seed? Are they a wild card team? What are they? I don't know. All I know is that they somehow, like, you would think this should be, wow, what a big deal. A low seed is up 3-0 in a series, but yet there's so much parity now because of how the playoffs are set up that it's really – I don't know how to quantify it. I'm being honest. I don't. But you know what else? Not a lot of people are paying attention to it right now. Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah. I mean, look, when you knock out the Boston Bruins, you did something pretty significant. I mean, a record-setting team. Yeah. No, it's interesting. The eighth seed thing. I don't know. So Don LaGreca can answer that question. He definitely can.
And then my thing on Ja Morant, I mean, I know anything's possible, but do you think it's possible that he's going to step away from basketball?
Well, I'm trying to figure out. Yeah. I'll tell you what, Mike. I'm trying to figure out what happened with these IG posts that everybody's talking about right now with him. That's concerning because the last one says bye. And
yeah, and that, and
you know, does he know something's coming? You know, that's the other question. Does he know he's going to get suspended? Is he sending that message? You know, there's a lot there that still needs to be decoded. But I can tell you in the basketball world, there are a lot of people that are very concerned about these posts that he put up that have since been deleted. So if we see something on that, we certainly will get it to you. All right, we'll put the calls on hold. We do have you stacked, racked, ready to go. We'll get back to you. But yes, Dan Graziano now has appeared. He is ready with us right now. And Graz, how are you?
I'm good. Sorry about that. They had me. They pushed back my SportsCenter hit, and it ran into this. So I apologize. I was
No, look, one of the hardest working.
I wasn't just loafing, you know, like hanging out outside, you know, eating lunch, whatever.
Sitting on the pier catching rays and was like, oh, yeah, damn.
It's forgot nice to call day. In. You know, you were here.
Yeah, absolutely.
You still here?
No,
you're not.
I escaped. Apparently, you had to fill in for me on Greeny's show because they let me go early on Get Up. And because I wanted to make my show, I left. And they're like, did you leave yet? I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
So then
and
I heard
Greeny
your
said,
voice.
You want to stay and talk basketball. So we've talked about the Celtics and your favorite memory of the Yankees Red Sox series from 04 and all that. So it was fun.
Why don't we start there then, since you brought it up, because you did cover that series. So,
yeah.
I mean, we're having fun with it, of course. But, you know, it's obviously two different sports. But still, is there something about the Celtics and an 0-3 comeback, like when the Lakers were playing the Nuggets, if the Lakers had won game four, it's not like we would have been, oh, I think the Lakers would come back and win this thing. Like, we just knew the Nuggets were the better team. But is there something about, like, are we crazy to watch the Celtics win one game and suddenly think, can they be the first one to do it?
No, I mean, I don't feel like it's crazy because, I mean, I feel like, and we're saying this back in 04, like, someday someone will. Like, it's not... We're not going to play basketball till the end of the world, and then it'll never happen. I mean, the more years that go by, the more chance there is that it eventually happens. So, I mean, look, you're a lot more, you know, involved with this stuff day to day than I am. The impression I got from the people that know and follow this league closely is that the Celtics are the better team in this series. They just certainly did not play like it the first three games. If that turns out to be correct and they are the better team, then of course, to win three more in a row, that's not – far-fetched. It probably underrates Miami a little. I mean, they did wipe out Milwaukee in five games, right? Yeah. So they're not nothing.
Right.
But the biggest difference you alluded to in baseball is, you know, every game is its own standalone unit because of the change in starting pitchers and giving you the opportunity to control the game that way. And I don't know that there's a basketball equivalent of that factor here.
Yeah, and that's the one thing Millar was saying, right? That was the Millar thing that he said that Jaylen Brown – Marcus Smart before last night's game both used that same phrase, don't let us win a game. Don't let us win a game. And what Millar was saying, because we got Pedro next. Like he knew Pedro would have pitched game five. Yeah. And so don't let us do that because we get our two best pitchers back. And that's the biggest difference between don't let us win one because of our pitching versus don't let us win one because then we get to go back and play at home where we're not very good. And so it's a much different conversation.
And they felt, and again, similarity there, that Red Sox team felt like it was the better team. The Yankees just had a hex on them for, 85 years?
Right.
And including the year before in that same series. So, and they lost game three, 19-8. So it looked like they were done, but, you know.
Yeah. But we'll see if history can happen. But we don't have you here, Dan Graziano, of course, our ESPN NFL insider. Just to talk baseball, just to talk basketball. But since you're here, we did that. But while I have you, of course, let's talk some football, and let's start with what we saw yesterday. And I know you quelled my nerves today, and so yesterday we're live on the air doing our show, And Diana Rossini's tweet, thank you for laughing because we were the same. We were like, wait a minute. Diana's tweets were coming fast and furious. And the first one was, Rodgers is out with the field and he's bouncing around and he's here he is with Zach Wilson and it's all just happy and, yeah. and wonderful. And then the next thing is, Rodgers is testing out the foot. He's standing with a trainer. I'm like, wait a second.
Right,
I need context.
Right away.
Like, we just got started. And then it's, he's out, still on the field, but not wearing a helmet. Like, that made that panic mode. And then Alan Lazard is down and not getting up. Like, whoa.
Well, that turned out to be something specific that he had
very
needed time to get over. But, yeah, I sent a text to somebody last night. The quarterback got hurt on the first day? And the response was, well, technically it's the second day, but he'll be fine. And it was the prevailing sentiment out of the Jets yesterday was he'll be fine. It's early in OTAs, and you know he felt something, so they're just gonna hold him out till he doesn't feel it anymore. And the expectation is that you know it's not something that'll threaten training camp or the season or anything like that. Obviously,
right. And the funny thing is, what he said was like, "This is like the first time in 3 years I've participated in OTAs." Which I find that really funny. So it's like, yeah, your body's probably going, wait, we're supposed to be on some beach somewhere. Like, what are we doing right now?
Right.
But
that'll teach him.
Right.
Yeah, good luck getting him there next year.
That's great. Look, if he's here next year, that's just a good thing, isn't it? Because we don't even know if, like, next year is not promised. It's all about this year. So with that in mind, like, what is your view, though, of where he is? Not physically. We know where he is. He's in Florham Park right now. He has talked about New Jersey. He actually, I found this funny, Dan. Tom Rock of Newsday tweeted, Aaron Rodgers said Long Island, period. And then he sent the tweet. Like, that's the hysteria of what we are, where we are right now. But I'm talking about where he is mentally. Dan Orlovsky talked about it a little bit today on Get Up, but like, you've covered him for a long time. Is there something different about Aaron Rodgers that you're seeing just in him being around this new franchise that he's with?
Yeah, I mean, look, a lot of it's just what I'm able to get from the people that are there. Because I haven't been there, and I don't have a sense of what the locker room's like and the meetings and all that stuff. But the reviews I'm getting are overwhelmingly positive. And I mean, the way I look at it is, like, while the whole saga was unfolding, he wants to go to the Jets, what's taking so long with the trade, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know, there were people in that building that, based on the way Rodgers had kind of carried himself the last couple of years, were like, yes, this is exciting, but part of me wonders what we're getting ourselves into here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So talking now to some of those same people that had those kind of reservations, if you will, the response I'm getting are, hey, he seems happy, he seems relieved, he seems energized. They're just excited. Like it's going, I think, better than they even expected in terms of his investment in what they're doing. The fact that he's there in OTAs obviously matters a lot to them. And they think it's going to help. So, yeah, I think it's the sense I get is that he's a different guy since he got there. Maybe he needed a change of scenery. Maybe he had just gotten to the point where he and the Packers just weren't going to be okay with each other anymore, and he needed to be somewhere that he felt more loved and appreciated. And if that's the case, it seems like he's found it.
Yeah, and again, it's always the honeymoon part of it, right? When the games start to count.
Yeah, I mean, it's May, man, right? Like, nobody's lost any games yet.
Yeah, this is the fun part, which we certainly love, and we want this part to last forever. But in the meantime, on the other side of things, another thing from this morning I'd love to get your take on is Dan Orlovsky did his top five quarterbacks under the most pressure. This is NFC, and he lists Daniel Jones in that list of five at number three.
Yeah.
He just signed a contract. What kind of pressure is Daniel Jones on?
To live up to the contract? I mean, like, he signed a contract based on a lot of good signs they saw in him last year. They felt like helped elevate a team, a roster that probably was not playoff caliber into the playoffs. By the way he played, by the way he stayed on the field, by the way he toughed things out, by the way he was able to run and contribute to the offense, even though the passing game was very, very rudimentary and underdeveloped there last year because they had no receivers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he only threw 15 touchdown passes last year. And, you know, you threw 15 touchdown passes and you get a $40 million a year contract. That's pretty good. pretty good work by the agent also. Yeah. But, you know, the expectation is that he'll improve, right? That he'll be even better. You know, still be the leader he was last year, still contribute with his legs, but also, you know, be a little more productive in the passing game. They feel like they've gotten a little more around him in terms of receiver talent, the tight end, Darren Waller as well. So they're paying him sort of speculatively, like, hey, we saw enough to convince us to do this.
Right.
Now you got to do it, right? And mm-hmm. And I think that's unusual. Usually you see the contract given to somebody for what they've already done.
Yeah, and it's always been backwards like that, right? It's always like we pay you for what you did.
Yeah.
Where sometimes it's like, how about you see somebody who's got a ton of talent? We're going to pay you for what we know you're going to do for us, and hopefully it'll end mm-hmm. up being a discount. But, and I know this isn't your list, but as I look at it, and I just say, how is Dak Prescott after him? I would think Dak is under way more pressure than Daniel Jones, right? You agree with me on that one?
I do agree. I think the expectations in Dallas are higher, not just, you know, perpetually, but I think this year specifically as well. Right.
So when it comes to Daniel Jones, it's something that Micah Parsons, speaking of Cowboys, said, and he's like, we prepare for Saquon Barkley. That's who we prepare for.
Yeah.
He's the offense.
Yep.
With his contract situation right now, with Jones is already signed. Now, I imagine the worst-case scenario has got to be they just bring him in on a franchise of 1 year. But it was what Micah Parsons said accurate? Like, is there still, despite the fact that the running back position has really been a devalued position, is Saquon Barkley still a linchpin to whether or not the Giants are going to have a successful season?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. Because he was a huge part of what they did last year as well. And he just has the unfortunate circumstance of being a running back in a market where nobody wants to pay one. So they prioritized, they had to franchise, you know, him after they signed Daniel Jones. If they hadn't signed Daniel, they probably would have let Saquon be a free agent. And I don't know what he would have got on the market. But he's stuck, and, you know, he probably ends up playing on the franchise tag unless he agrees to sort of their deal. From Micah Parsons' perspective, I don't think that's an unusual perspective from an opponent. Daniel Jones is kind of a polarizing player ever since he got drafted, right? He got picked sixth, and a lot of people thought that was way too early for him and the Giants, you know, but and I think from an opponent standpoint, they don't look at Daniel Jones as like a dangerous player, in terms of him throwing the ball. So, yes, Saquon is the one that scares you if you're an opponent right now. And to the earlier point, I think it's on Daniel Jones to start changing that.
Do you feel like, if you heard anything around the league, and obviously you pay attention to a lot of the stuff that's said about different players, because Saquon clearly thinks he belongs in the McCaffrey area of $16 million. Is there and if I'm the Giants, like, if you think you can get that, go ahead. Let's see. Do you think there's teams out there that would give Saquon Barkley that kind of money?
I do not. I mean, look, I think he's perceived as an excellent player, but he has been hurt a lot. And yes, McCaffrey was too. But prior to the contract, I'm not sure McCaffrey missed a ton of time. And Saquon, you know, how many years have you been in the league now? Five years?
Yeah.
You know, two or three of them kind of really were dominated by the fact that he couldn't get on the field. So that's one reason. And the other reason is, like, since the McCaffrey contract, all these others that followed, right? Ezekiel Elliott, you know, Dalvin Cook, they're trying to get out of that one now. Like, there's just all kinds of evidence not to stretch for the running back because you don't have to. The Chiefs just won the Super Bowl with a seventh-round rookie.
Yep.
Like, and Jerick McKinnon, who's been a journeyman, like you can figure it out at running back, and that stinks for these guys, but it's a fact of life. Look at Austin Eckler demands. Austin Eckler scored more touchdowns than anybody in the league the last 2 years. He's banking $6 million a year. He demands a trade because the Chargers don't want to pay him more. He can't find a trade. Mm-hmm. No team's going to want to trade for him and then pay him, and the Chargers end up bringing him back and giving him an extra $1.75 million in incentives, which – you know, that just tells you he didn't find what he was looking for.
Right. That was the pat on the back. So you're not mm-hmm. embarrassed. We'll throw you these incentives just to make it look
good.
Yeah,
here's a little something for you.
For the trouble. Right. I felt like the running back position has become now one that is plug and play. I can draft a guy 4 years. You know, it's like when you lease a car. 3 years from now, the miles will be up, and I'll just turn it in.
It's
I'll lease another
car. It's a lot like that. That's a great comparison. I mean, it's a shame that we're, I mean, right. like these guys work hard and it's a very difficult job, and it's unfortunate for them that it's come to this. But I do think that perception is out there that, yes, we can have this guy on his rookie contract. And ultimately, if we end up giving him a second contract, he'll have earned it. But, you know, there's always some question about whether that's a wise thing to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of them get him. And I think Saquon could get one. It's just it's going to have to be a lot closer to the Giants' numbers than the ones he has in mind.
No doubt about that. Dan, great to talk to you as always. I will see you. Are you working Friday? You'll be there Friday?
No, I'm off till next week. Oh. I'm off, but I'm home till next week.
Gotcha. Enjoy it. All right, my man. Thank you. All right, Dan Graziano. Hey, one of the hardest working men. He can host Get Up. He can be on an analyst, all that stuff. Like, that's what you love. And great insight there on the Saquon Barkley stuff with the Giants, no doubt about it. Okay.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
We got your calls, 800-919-3776, and we certainly will get back to those. But before we do that, you know what time of the show it is. At this point, you could say it with me. It is time for us to step aside and let the headline makers do the talking in this segment we like to call
Audio Files.
The Audio Files.
I'm trying to think of what character Dino sounds like when he does that. It's almost like, what is the cheetah's name for Cheetos in that, right?
Chester.
Is it Chester Cheeto?
Chester Cheetah.
Like you sound just, maybe you sound just like that.
I'll take Cheetos.
You like that, right? Like, that's, it's a good comp?
Yeah, nobody.
I think it's a pretty good comp.
Does anybody dislike Cheetos?
It's really hard to dislike Cheetos. You know, the only thing to dislike about Cheetos is like, then your hand's covered in that orange powder. You don't like that, especially on a like sweaty day. Yeah.
Yeah, that'll just, get all over the place.
Just let that now be in your visuals while we discuss audio files. All right. Where to begin with audio files? Why don't we begin where we left off just a moment ago and talking some football? And how about Roger Goodell? Now, you've heard about Thursday Night Football Flex now. They have the ability to do this. That is something that the owners have been talking about, flexing games in and out. And this, of course, causes all kinds of consternation because, wait a minute, teams now have to find out. Now, you need to know, I believe it's 2 weeks, right? You have to have at least, or is it a month, ahead of schedule. But it's just so we don't have crappy Thursday night games because it's a standalone game. And you don't want bad teams playing or a team that's got like a million injuries. You don't want to do that. So you want good matchups. So you can flex some if you feel the need to later in the season. And so people are concerned about that because these short weeks for some players, it's, you know, not good when it comes to player safety. Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the league, pushed back. Page is about to blow up, boys. Play that for me.
Flex has been part of our scheduling for quite a while. We expanded it to Thursday night. It will be used judiciously, if at all. It's a very limited time period, and it's also something that is what we would consider a higher bar. We expanded it to 28 days in the context of our fans and making sure that they have appropriate notice if that does happen. But we have data on the safety of the game. There's been no difference. In fact, it's slightly lower on Thursday nights. We don't see that. We haven't seen that in the data since we've been playing since 2006, I believe it is. So we don't think it's inconsistent at all with player safety.
Got to give Goodell credit. He was prepared. He knew the pushback, and he had all the stats and numbers ready to go to let you know that like what you're saying is not actually what's happened there. Yeah, it was 28 days. So, yeah, it's a month. And it's right. For players, it's one thing. And for fans, too. Hey, we're taking your Sunday afternoon and we're blowing it up. Now you're gonna see us on Thursday night instead. That's a big deal to fans who prepare, right? You're like, you know in advance, hey, I'm going to the game. Like, it's very rare to you last minute show up for an NFL game. Usually it's plan ahead. And so you want also the fans to know that no, you're not gonna, this is not gonna be a 1 o'clock game on Sunday. This is now Thursday after work. Now you gotta change everything that you're doing. So they give you the 28 days, the month. And it's fair. But if you have a problem with the flex schedule, then you can't complain when Thursday night games suck. Because you know, again, it's a standalone. Like, you're stuck. You have to go to Amazon. You got to watch it there. So if you're going to watch football, you can't complain, oh, that Thursday night game's terrible. These two teams, like Texans, Saints, who the hell wants to watch that? You know, like that, you can't complain about that. But flexing it makes those games better, especially it's really later in the season where it matters most. That's when they're going to do it. All right, moving on. More football. One more here. And this is Ben Roethlisberger. When talking about he's got his football in with Ben Pod, talking about his, I guess you could say that he is the next franchise quarterback of the Steelers. Kenny Pickett, who was drafted. And he was, remember, he played at Pitt, and he was like the homegrown sort of player that the Steelers knew about. And while the fans love him, Big Ben lets people know that he didn't really want to see him do well.
I probably shouldn't say this, but I mean, who cares at this point? I wouldn't say that I wanted Kenny to necessarily fail, but like, you know, when someone comes to replace you, and you're like, you know, I still feel like I had it. Like, I hope he doesn't come like ball out, because then it's like Ben who, right?
Right.
But honestly, I think as you started playing, I found myself rooting more and more for you. So I feel bad, and I know I came on this show and said that I forget how I said it, but I like apologized to you for not knowing how good he was going to be.
Yeah.
Like, I just didn't know. I had no idea. I thought you'd be a quarterback that was good, that was going to come in. I think you're the future of this team. I really do. And it's been fun watching you. I enjoy texting you after games, and I mean, I'm a fan.
Appreciate man. That means a lot. Obviously, watching you growing up, you know.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, nothing makes you feel older than when you get something like that. Do you think one day that Aaron Rodgers will be on a podcast with Jordan Love? Yeah, me either. But I love the honesty from Roethlisberger there. It does bring you into that window, right? Here's Big Ben, as decorated as a player as you can be in the NFL, right? He's got championships. He's had a full career. He was at the end. We all knew he was at the end. They drafted a fan favorite who was in their backyard, and the fans wanted to see Kenny Pickett. And even then, Big Ben was like, the hell with this kid, right? Like, it just... You understand that it's easy for us as fans to look at this stuff and say, you should act this way, you should act that way. Just understand that these guys are competitors for a reason. So you don't want to see your replacement play better than you, step in front of you and just take it from here. I got it, Pops. Go have a seat. You know, it's not easy for these guys. So it was a pretty cool story that he shared there. And he did so with Kenny Pickett, who had to laugh that one off and then take a shot at him at the end. You know, I grew up watching you play. Yeah. I get it. All right, moving on. Let's see. There was this conversation about when Pete Alonso, was it last week, right, had the walk-off and was on with Gelbsy on SNY, but also on the PA in Citi Field, and he dropped an F-bomb because it was the LFGM, Let's Blank and Go Mets, that is all over the place. And he says it, and it was, you know, again, it's just he's in the moment. He's fired up. And I guess some people were offended by the fact that he dropped the F-bomb there. So Buck Showalter, on with the Michael Kay Show yesterday, celebrating his birthday, was asked about the polar bear dropping an F-bomb.
Of course it did. So did his mother. You know, hey, I learned my lesson a long time ago. My mother could read lips. And boy, that Sunday drive home after a day game when I would always call her and put the phone on speaker and let her go, she would tell me. And I always felt horrible. And, it's not a good idea and something that, you know, I don't think you'll see happen again. I hope not.
Well, I mean, it's a passionate moment. I wasn't going to go too crazy with this stuff. Kids, yes, are in the building. I understand that. But we growing up as kids versus what kids are exposed to today, as much as you like it or not, you want to protect them and shield them from things. But there's so much available to them at this point, it's impossible to avoid. You're going to tell me that walking out of Citi Field, just walking out of the building, you're not hearing words? Come on. Like, it's all around you. It's what you teach them, what's right and wrong. And just quick story here. I was playing in high school. I believe I was in 10th grade, a sophomore at St. Anthony's. Yes, Catholic high school. And I was terrible when it came to just cursing a blue streak during games because I had a lot of rage in me. And so a foul was called on me and I was mad. And I knew like I made a mistake and I was so at just the because it's noisy in the gym. So you generally can get away with just spitting out a curse just real quick, just out of frustration. But in that one moment, the gym got quiet just as I burst out a loud F-bomb. And I mean loud. And then everybody did that. Ooh. And of course, my mother yells my name and I know now, the technical foul I got, I looked at the ref, I'm like, man, this ain't nothing compared to what I'm about to face when I get home. Anyways, moving on. In audio files, we'll give you a little pinstripe reports brought to you by Samwell Institute for Pain Management. What happened last night was exciting. Yankee Stadium, comeback against the Orioles, down 4-0. They get it to 5-4. And then Aaron Judge, game tying home run in the 9th, gets you into the 10th. And in the 10th, this happens.
High fly ball. Mullins goes back. Still goes back. This will get it done. He makes the catch. Tagging. Tagovailoa. He will score. And the Yankees with a dramatic 6-5 win over the Orioles. And the rookie gets it done in the bottom of the 10th.
The great voice of course, Michael Kay with the call on the YES Network. And Anthony Volpe gets it done. And afterwards, he gets an ice bath from Judge and Rizzo. And he gets to talk to Meredith Marakovich about his very first walk-off hit.
I don't know if it's really hit me, but yeah, it's definitely one of the best feelings I've ever had.
Hopefully many more. That's the Pinstripe Report. It's brought to you by Samwell Institute for Pain Management for a pain-free life. Visit samwellpain.com today. All right, that's audio files. No, it isn't. We have one more. I want to play this. I don't care. I know we're late. I'm going to do it anyway because we're going to get into this a little bit later on. Celtics win last night to avoid a sweep. So now it's 3-1 going back to Boston for game 5. Jimmy Butler is asked if he's worried because do the Celtics now, after winning just one game, have momentum?
No. If anything, it'll build momentum for us, knowing that we have to play with a lot more energy. You know, we got to play like our backs are against the wall. But I think all year long, we've been better and are ready to do things the hard way.
Don't you love the cliches? There's nothing better than that. Can the Celtics be the first team in NBA history to come back from an 0-3 deficit to win a playoff series? 800-919-3776. All right, that now is audio files. Thank you, Ray. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
Basketball to get to. Because when you look at what happened last night, between the Celtics and the Heat. And we had this call this morning, a production call for Get Up. And it was this whole discussion of, like, Greeny was insistent. He's like, it's 150 times a team has taken a 3-0 lead. And no team has ever come back from down 0-3. So the team that takes a 3-0 lead has won the series 150 times. And it's like only a handful of times has a series even been pushed to 7 games. It just doesn't happen. It's happened in hockey many times. Many being like, 5? But it's still a lot when you consider it. And it happened in baseball famously back in 2004. Or infamously if you're here in New York. But in basketball, it just doesn't happen. And so he's insisted it's got to happen at some point. Like you heard Graz say it when we just talked to him earlier. Right? Somebody's going to have to do it eventually. At some point, it's going to happen. And we look at this series and think this might be the one because look how it's broken down. Look at the whole thing about this series. It's a team that is technically, and I say technically, an 8th seed. Now, technically, Miami finished 7th in the East, but had to play the play-in, lost the first game of the play-in, and then won the second game to earn the eighth seed. Miami, throughout most of the season, was fifth, right? They were fifth, sixth. Like, they were always in that range. But they had just, they faltered towards the end and found themselves having to play in the play-in. So they really weren't a typical, like when the Denver Nuggets, you know, won an eighth seed, upset in the first round. Like, they weren't one of those types of eighth seed. It's like the 99 Knicks weren't a typical eighth seed. That team was loaded. That was a really good team that just, because of a short lockout year, was a mess most of that season and couldn't really get themselves right. But everybody knew, like, once they got right, they were a dangerous team. That's Miami. By the way, that Knicks 99 team was the last eighth seed to go to the NBA Finals, the only eighth seed to get to the NBA Finals. The Heat are one win away from matching that. Coincidentally, the Knicks beat the Heat in the first round of that year. Remember Allen Houston running jumper? Like, that was what set that whole thing up. After Allen Houston hit that shot and the Knicks went to the second round, they played the Atlanta Hawks. You know what they did in that series? They won in a sweep. They went up 3-0, and they closed it out. They won in a sweep. And that's what I went to that. And I said, you know what? That's a little more realistic. The team went up 3-0 as an eighth seed. The last eighth seed. Now, again, the Heat are technically an eighth seed. That's what they are, because that's the seed they got going into the postseason, but they were seventh in the East. Anyways, the only other team to go up 3-0 in a best-of-seven series was that 99 Knicks, and they won in a sweep. So the Heat weren't able to match that. They lost the game. So how about the low seeds? That's the other thing. How many times did a low seed have a 3-0 lead? Not just an eighth seed, but just the low seed. So we looked that up. And this is the ninth instance, a lower seed had a 3-0 lead over a team that was a higher seed. Six of the previous eight ended in a sweep. So this is, again, and by the way, the other two ended in five. So history tells us there won't be a comeback. History tells us this series will end in game five. If Boston wins at home in game five, which they have not been a good home team, by the way. I think they're 4-5 in the playoffs at home. But if Boston wins game five, then it'll be the longest that a low seed, like, it'll be no high seed has ever even pushed it to six games. Like, usually you let go of the rope. You give up. You're done. And if I told you the Celtics were done after game three, you'd believe me, because they looked terrible. They were smoked. They were down by 30. But because of what they are, you look at them on paper. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, Al Horford, you know, Time Lord, Malcolm Brogdon, Sixth Man of the Year. You know, they have a good team. Shouldn't they be better than this? They should not be a team that meekly bows out in five. But we thought the same thing about the Milwaukee Bucks, and they were out in five. And as I've said, as you watch Miami, as a Knicks fan, do you look and think, we didn't do so bad? Right? Like, do you take anything out of what Miami has done to everybody else but you? Because you had, not only were you in the sixth game, but you had possession. You had a chance to force a seventh game, a legit chance, in the final minutes of game six. That's all you, like, you could have made them go to seven. You pushed them to the brink. You fought them tooth and nail. The point differential in that series was under four per game. That's how close that series was. But this series with Boston is like, it's, I think, about 10, whatever it is, or 12. The series with the Bucks was about six. So it is much different how they've done against arguably better teams than they did against you. But the two questions to ask is this: which team do you expect more from? Miami turning back into a pumpkin? Can they really just keep doing this? Is this team really going to a finals? Or Boston finally getting it right Can this team get its head out of its you-know-what and play to their potential, play to their expectations? Never mind play their best. Just play to their expectations. This is who they're supposed to be. So when you say that, Miami's playing out of their heads. They are. That's not a disrespect to them at all. It's reality. Miami is playing out of their heads. When you say that and then you couple it with, and Boston, these first three games, they have been awful. They've been pathetic. They have given up at times in the game when it's gotten too hard and they're so physical and it's unfair. We're not getting calls. Like, they have become that team. Whiners. So they have not been right. So if this game that they won last night kind of gets them right, history can happen. As much as it makes me want to throw up my mouth to say it, I have to be honest. What I saw last night tells me that if a team is going to make a comeback from 0-3, this Boston Celtics team is the one to do it. I'm not saying they will, because I don't trust them. But if they did it, it would not be a shock.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.